as bad as it gets. I'm a boxer, blind when I swing. I sink to my knees. I cling.
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Monday, the 30th of November, last day of the month. And we welcome you to our program to discuss what's happening in the world. It's been a long holiday weekend for many, and we have to catch up, so we will do that this morning. Hopefully you are well, you are safe, you are good after a long weekend, if you were able to enjoy such a thing. Let us go and welcome the group. I do want to just remind you, however, that you can always write to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Let me introduce the group to you. WAMC's Alan Chartak is here, of course. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Well, good morning, Joseph. We have already spoken a couple of times this morning, but it's great to hear your voice and to know you're at the helm.
Well, good to hear yours. And here we are. Here we go. And we are also thrilled to welcome Judy Patrick back to this program. She's Vice President for Editorial Development of the New York Press Association. Good morning, Judy. How are you?
I am fine, Joseph. It is our first time talking today, so it's wonderful to hear your voice.
Yeah, we did.
That's one-upmanship if I ever heard
it. Yeah, we haven't had a pre-call, but good morning, Judy. How are you?
I'm fine.
Good. Libby Post is here, a political consultant and our dear friend. Hello, Libby.
Good morning, Joe. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. Hopefully you had a lovely holiday.
Yes, we did. It was very, 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 very quiet.
Isn't that, you know, it is kind of great, though.
Yeah.
I will say after, like, the second day of quiet, I was like, okay. You know, maybe I'll go back to work. But it was fine. It was lovely.
Yeah, it was.
Rosemary Armeo joins us. We're thrilled to have Rosemary here because as of about 15 minutes ago, we didn't have a guest. Investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor. Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary.
Yeah, that's me. Better than nothing.
No, not at all. We had an illness that took out one of our panel members, and we put out some calls, and thankfully you picked up, and we couldn't be more happy.
Okay, good. We'll see about that.
Yeah. Oh, you're ready to go. You know it. All right. Good morning, everyone. Let's get to it, and a lot to talk about. So. The president is still saying that he won the election. That's still going on. There was a recount in Wisconsin that was done. They called for this. The Trump campaign called for this this recount. It did change a couple of things. Joe Biden actually got more votes in the recount, and Donald Trump still lost. But still, it's the completion of the recount, and it added to a pileup of defeats for the president as he continues to attack Biden's national victory, claiming without evidence that widespread fraud tainted the results. The thing that seems to really be getting under his skin at the moment is the report that Joe Biden received over 80 million votes. That is something the president can just not get over. And he's not taking it well and taking every chance he can get on Twitter and on the very few broadcast events that he has. No press conferences. There was one on Thanksgiving that didn't go especially well, especially if you were Jeff Mason from Reuters. But he also then went on with Mario Bartiromo on Fox News or Fox Business, right? And talked to her and went off on this as well. So, in other words, really not much has changed since we last spoke on Wednesday of last week, except that the numbers continue to come in the vice president's, the former vice president's favor, the president-elect's favor, and we are now told that the president just probably won't concede at all, and may or may not be at the inauguration, and may or may not really be doing anything between now and the 20th other than, you know, I don't know, pardoning people and other assorted mischief. Alan.
Well, I'll tell you the one thing that scares me to death, because I'm always the person who thinks, well, you know, the glass may be 99.98 filled, but that's the other 0.2% that make me nervous. And what makes me nervous in all of this, I don't know if the panel agrees with me, are those folks on the Supreme Court. And one of the reasons I think these judges, these federal judges, including Trump appointees, have been so adamant about Trump's behavior and what he's been saying is because they know that sooner or later that this thing may get to the Supreme Court and that the lower federal courts should have really reamed them out, told them in no uncertain terms, this is unacceptable. This is unacceptable behavior, and wait till it gets to the courts. Now, I think this court has chutzpah, as evidenced by certain recent rulings.
Yeah.
But do I believe that he's capable of bringing it to the Supreme Court? His people are already saying we want it at the Supreme Court. And he said in the run-up to the election that he wanted to put Barrett on the Supreme Court so that he would have somebody who would be there for him when he needed it during the and if he needed it during the election. And now we'll see. How'd you like to be her?
Well, the court, it has to have merit, right? The case has to have some merit to get to the Supreme Court.
Oh, really? As Mario used to say, oh, really?
Well, I mean, would have to appeal a federal court ruling.
No, we all agree on that. That's not the point. The point is merit in one person's eyes is not in another. And do I believe that this guy keeps saying this over and over and over again, knowing that if he is deposed and if he's out of there, he faces all of these criminal charges and everything else? Is he capable of going to the court, putting individual pressure on that court? Remember, this is a guy who had to appoint some of these people and who must know an awful lot about them that maybe the public doesn't know.
Yeah, so, but Alan, there are lower federal court judges who he has appointed who have said no and thrown out his cases in the state. And so it's very unlikely. I mean, I get what you're saying. And it is, you know, there is this slim chance that the Supreme Court would take this up, but if no federal court is going to give this any credence, it would be very, very difficult for the Supreme Court without any real evidence, because there isn't any, to take this up. You know, I get what you're saying, and I think we can all be a little paranoid about this, but there's no evidence, and the Supreme Court has to act on evidence.
You will remember the song that suggested, Libby, that paranoia will destroy you, number one. And number two...
It doesn't mean they're not out to get you.
That's right. Doesn't mean they're not out to get you. And he is out to get us, no question about it. Now, look, we've been talking about this again and again. I hear what you're saying. I said 98.8.
Right.
99.9.
Like, I agree so. Sure.
Yeah. Nevertheless, is he capable of it? Absolutely. Are there some people on that court who we have deep suspicions about? Let me ask you a question, Libby. If Alito and Thomas are asked to rule on this, do you have any doubt where they'll be?
I think
no matter what?
Thomas, I have no doubt where Thomas would be. Alito, I'm not so sure about.
Well, it's a good guessing game.
I don't think Roberts would let it even come up.
Wait a second. You better believe that Roberts has been doing pretty well lately, right? We all agree on that. And but he just got outruled 7-3, right? Oh, no, excuse me, yes.
No, 5-4.
There's only 9, that's right.
Yeah, 5-4.
Carry the war.
Yeah, right. That's the new math, I'm worried. I am truly worried. I've always been worried. I think that they will try anything they can to keep this guy in office. Nothing stops him. And one other thing, he is such a liar. Now, we've talked about that many, many times. We started calling him a lying liar before anybody else wanted to use that word, including CNN or anybody else. But he is, and he is. It turns out that the guy is really nuts. Now, I will hear from some of my mental health friends who say I'm not supposed to say that, but he's nuts. And yeah. That is a very dangerous place to be. And don't be writing me letters about the 25th Amendment, because go read it first before you write me a letter and look at who has to sign off on that, and it ain't going to happen. So one of the things I hope will come up during the Biden years is, and the Congress, is a new approach to getting rid of a bad president.
So now you're saying that you do think Biden is going to take the oath of office.
I do.
That's the 99%.
I do. I do. Yeah. I do think so. I certainly hope so. And I just want to give him one piece of advice. Not that it matters. Don't be playing football. Who do you think you are, Kennedy?
I'm sorry. I don't get that reference, but that's okay.
Okay. The reference is that he went to the hospital, and he had hurt his ankle.
Yeah, well, it was with the dog, though, right?
He was playing with the dog.
Yeah.
But it turns out he has a hairline fracture. I've had a few of those in my life, and they can be quite painful. So it was a little bit of sarcasm. You see, now let me explain it to you, Joe. Don't be playing football. Who do you think you are, Kennedy?
Right.
Okay. Judy, help me out. How are you?
You know, the only lawsuit I think has any merit is the civil lawsuit against the Trump campaign by the foolish millionaire who's suing to get his $2 million back because he donated to, in thinking that maybe Trump had some basis for all these election challenges. He's suing for fraud. He's saying he's misled. He said he thought he really did have a chance, and now he wants his money back. I think that's a great lawsuit, and I think maybe that has a chance of getting someplace.
Well, you can say getting someplace, but when you say getting to the Supreme Court of the United States, now that's when I'd bet you money on that guy loses.
Well, I think that one will be resolved very quickly in court, where the court will rule he should have known that these lawsuits would go nowhere. He voluntarily made his contribution to the Trump campaign, and he should take his losses and think better next time.
Exactly.
Rosemary.
Well, I think Trump has turned out to be a sore loser of historic proportions, and I think we're hearing a lot of liberal worry this morning, which is understandable, but I think completely unjustified. There's just absolutely nothing for the court to hold on, even Alioto or Thomas, to hold on to say we need to look at this. You were talking about disenfranchising hundreds of thousands of people based on evidence presented in lower courts, and where is that evidence? I have to say I am shocked by how poorly this has all been handled. I would have thought in voting involving this many people that they might actually have come up with a case or two that they could hang a Supreme Court challenge on. They have not, and that is a massive failure of politicians and lawyers working for Trump. It's one more sign of his not just his bad intentions, but his just incompetence at getting anything done. And I'm far more worried than about the Supreme Court, about the people who continue to support him, who see in his ridiculous cases up to now. I mean, he's been rebuked, not just rejected by judges, but rebuked at them for bringing this foolishness, and yet people still believe him. I also worry about newscasters like Marie Bartiromo. Oh my gosh, what an interview. That was not an interview. It was like, here, Mr. President, come and spew garbage and propaganda for an hour. And it happened. And this is to Donald Trump, who does not deserve the treatment that he's getting from either his supporters or the news business.
You think the Fox will discipline her?
Pardon me?
Do you think Fox will discipline her?
Discipline her? Oh, no. I think she was told to do that. She's now moved from news And she was, at one point, I'm reading, quite a respected business journalist. But now she's she's like Judge Jeanine right now and Sean Hannity. Oh, Mr. President, you are right. It's just terrible what's happened to you. I mean, it was unbelievable.
There were some people on the network who stood up in their programs and said, okay, but you should have asked this, 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 and this. I don't know if that matters, and I don't know how planned that is. But, you know, at least you have a couple of people that are raising concern. So what does where do we in the minute 90 seconds or so that we have before we have to go over to a break, when you look at what happens next, I just assume this is going to continue in the manner that it's going until, well, probably well till he's out of the Oval Office, but just continue in this fashion that he did say that he would never concede. I think he used the 6-month term weirdly. We assume that is not going to change. But you're running out of lawsuits, right? There's not much more you can do, and there is going to be a point when the Electoral College says, okay, as Alan would say, you stick a fork and it's done.
But you know that he's going. You know that he's going to do something in the next 50 or so days, because he won't stop. He can't stop. He faces imprisonment, or he faces the potential for imprisonment. So he won't stop. Now, what if he calls out? Here's a what if. What if he calls out the Proud Boys? What if he calls out the thugs? What if he calls out the guys with guns? You think he's above that?
Anyone?
No, I don't.
No wonder.
Well, go ahead. We have 45 seconds. Go ahead, Judy.
No wonder Alan can't sleep at night. He gets up. He worries so much. I don't think this is going to happen. I think that the power is slowly draining out of Trump. He's losing Twitter followers every day. I mean, you're seeing things shift. I know that he may try, but listen, where I'm from, which is Trump territory, I'm seeing those signs come down, and I'm seeing the power drain away from him.
You and my wife are on the same team.
Good.
What are you getting up for? What are you worrying about? We'll handle it when it happens.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. We have a few already. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Rosemary Armeo, and Libby Post. Okay, let's go to some letters. We go to Matt. Fox News needs to be charged with sedition and shunned by our society, which has been protected by the U.S. Constitution for 250 years. Their continued promulgation of lies and baseless conspiracy theories has metastasized, too early on a Monday to say that word, from an exercise in free speech to outright treason. Your thoughts, panel?
It would be lovely, but there is this little pesky thing called freedom of the press. And it would be very difficult, I think. It's not like we're in 1776 anymore.
Rosemary?
I think Fox is getting into trouble in the way that media should get in trouble, and that's with the public. Supposedly, their offense is that they aren't supportive enough of Trump. Try to reason that out. And that they're getting increased competition from Newsmax and OAN, and who knows, Trump himself may be plotting something. I don't actually think that. I don't think that's too much work for Trump. I think what's coming is he's going to put on lots of events for Fox to be covering and win back their share, starting on Inauguration Day. Watch for him to hold a rally or some sort of maybe his first Trump in 2024 campaign event on that day. I think that we've not heard the end of Trump and his alliance with Fox News.
There is an interesting piece in the, I believe it's the New York Times, about Newsmax and it becoming the now go-to source for people who are upset with Fox.
Yeah, NPR did it this morning, too.
Yeah.
You know, the Times tends to follow NPR. NPR tends to follow the Times. Sometimes they're both way off the mark.
Heather writes, whether or not courts uphold any of the Trump lawsuits, a large number of his supporters remain behind him and believe he is the rightful leader. Panel, how can we address this? I am very concerned. Judy.
Yeah, it's a tough one. But again, I do believe that even Trump supporters are realizing that Joe Biden has been elected president, although he will still have a loyal base. And, you know, there's I'm of two minds. Either you have to try to understand them and appreciate the fact that they feel like they have been overlooked by mainstream everything for so long. The other thing is maybe just to, you know, write them off, that you're never going to convince them that, you know, certain things aren't true. And, you know, you can't deprogram them is the thing. You can't sit them all not in an auditorium and say, these things are not true. This is what is true. I think you just have to, it's an issue you have to chip away. And one of the things a free press can do is slowly but surely chip away and make people realize what's right and what's right, what's wrong. Joe Biden can do a lot for this. I mean, he can start championing the press. He can give speeches about it. He can become more transparent. He can advocate for press freedom around the world. And, I mean, he's in a great position to use his bully pulpit to start correcting the wayward trend that so much of our country has taken.
Kim writes, what kind of pressure could Trump possibly put on any Supreme Court justice? How can he dictate anything to them? What could he say that could affect their reasoning and decisions? They're appointed, not elected for life. Aren't they out of his reach now?
One would think so. One would think
Hold on. Go ahead, Alan, and then we'll go around.
Well, no, I defer to Rosemary.
He could say, Mr. Kavanaugh, we are going to let people know where your debt was incurred and who paid it off. So stay in mind.
Exactly what I said before.
Clarence Thomas, there is liability on the part of the activism of his wife. Yeah, I think that Trump could wreak havoc in each of their individual lives.
But they, in turn, could wreak havoc in his life.
Yeah, right.
How so?
No one can touch Trump. Come on. No one can touch Trump.
Well, that's right.
I disagree.
There is nothing you can say about him or prove about him that changes his base. He's more than Teflon, man. Nobody can hurt Trump.
What are you going to do?
I disagree. I disagree. As once he leaves the White House and all of these lawsuits come tumbling down, you know, we're going to have one in New York, if not more. You know, his armor will get a little tarnished. And I think we will see, as Judy said, and Roselle, some drop off from his support. I mean, you have these nuts people. They're crazy. And excuse me for everybody, but they're nuts and delusional that they think that he has won. And they won't take no for an answer. But after a while, it gets hard to keep that up, especially when your Fuhrer, because that's what he is being indicted in a slew of states. And he's asking people to send money to help defend him in these lawsuits when some of these people don't have enough money to put food on the table anymore because of COVID, and they've lost their jobs. So, you know, there's a whole waterfall and avalanche that's coming down on this guy's head that I think will weaken his base and weaken his support.
I wish I could agree with you. I wish I could agree with you. What are you going to do? Impeachment? Impeachment? You can't do it. Look, this guy, these people had a chance to desert him for all the reasons you're saying now. In other words, things were so bad in their houses and they couldn't put food on the table. They still marched outside in unison, put up the signs, and voted for him so that he got more votes than anybody except Joe Biden in the history of the United States. Unbelievable. So I don't know that I would agree with you that there's going to be this expected fall off among them.
Trump's genius found the weaknesses in the system. And one of the weaknesses he has exposed is that if you are a rich man, with no sense of shame, you can beat the justice system. He's done it for 72 years, and he will continue to do it. I will be really, really surprised to see these fantasized about lawsuits come to fruition, especially with Joe Biden saying, no, we have to have peace and unity and kumbaya. Nope.
Well, except for one thing, Rosemary, that's sort of interesting to me, and that is there was an article, I think, in the Times, but it may have been one of the other newspapers this morning, that Cy Vance has like eight potential opponents in his election. The one thing that he's got going for him in a primary, the one thing that he's got going for him is what he's threatening to do to Trump. I don't think he can let it go. I don't think he can let it go politically.
Judy?
I want everybody to remember that the ratings for The Apprentice eventually fell, that people tired of The Apprentice. Mm-hmm. They tired of Trump. Even Honey Boo Boo, her ratings fell eventually. All
my
these
God,
things have a
is
life
nothing
cycle.
Sacred? Even Honey Boo Boo?
All these things have a life cycle, and people, once he loses his power, I think people gravitated to him because they thought he was rich, they thought he was powerful. Once he loses the power, they will walk away. Something new will come up. Mitch McConnell will become more interesting, if that would be possible. But I think he will start to suffer from these losses. He has gone bankrupt. He has lost money, and I think things will start to go badly for him. The people are not going to be there forever. They are going to get tired of this.
Especially if we find out, and I suspect once Biden gets into the White House, we may find out what his relate. Remember, Biden was now going to have the CIA and all these other guys to investigate this. What exactly was that relationship with Putin? We know it's there. We don't know what was behind it.
You know, it seems to me that... Go ahead, Rosemary.
No what?
No. I mean, this is the same kind of magical thinking, like, oh, he'll pivot. He'll become more presidential. Oh, he's not going to... No, he's Trump, and he's come very, very far with the same thing, and it's going to continue. I mean, really, it just 2 months ago, you were saying, oh, there'll be... You know, nobody's going to vote for him now because they see all the bad things he has done. He has...
I didn't say that.
Support that has nothing to do with him. And no, I just don't see him being brought to contrition by Cy Vance or any mere mortals. History will show what his relationship with Putin. And history will not do well with him. But in our lifetime, I think we have to get used to the idea that Trump has had a comfortable life and will continue to have it.
To which I say, want to bet.
Right. Except, right. Alan, you're also doing the doomsday scenario. So which is it?
No. Remember what I said, 98.9
okay.
Or 99.2. I didn't say doomsday scenario. I said this is a possibility. Do I think, by the way, do I really think that Trump is going to, as he gets more and more desperate, rely on people like the Proud Boys and doing all of that stuff? Yes, I do. I think he has no bottom, and I think he will do all of that.
You know, you're just talking, though, about the panel. It was just talking about him, you know, losing everything. But, you know, he's already, look, he lost the election. He is facing massive lawsuits. He is running scared. And so it seems like he's already miserable. I mean, I don't know, like, what more? the only difference is that he's not aware of it. He just keeps on saying, I won, everything's fine, and keeps on going.
Which is proof of mental illness, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I've always been torn as to whether he knew what he was doing or whether he was mentally ill. Now I'm beginning to come over. I always thought he knew exactly what he was doing. I've now come over to the mental illness side, watching his performance this weekend with Bartolomé and the rest. He is really nuts.
Well, and there's a whole, you know, the people who've been following him for decades have said, look, there's really no difference in this, in the way that he is greeting this defeat in the election, than there was when his casino went bankrupt in New Jersey. You blame people, you say that it's rigged, that they were out to get him, and that's the MO, and that's what he's had from the very beginning, and then he just goes off and then does something else again.
Right, it's the Roy Cohn school of how to get through life. But that casino that you just mentioned is on schedule to implode soon. They're going to be taking it down. And building something else there, not Trump, but you know, but he has never in his life had to take responsibility for any of his actions. And that might all be coming home to roost now.
Yeah, he's going to pivot.
He can pivot all he wants, but the lawsuits are going to pile up, the money is going to dry up, and he's going to be in a world of hurt.
And by the way, just one last thing. I know you have to go to break, Joe, but, you know, we have to keep our eyes on Georgia. We absolutely have to keep our eyes on Georgia, because that is, the people of Georgia now have the ability to change things forever in American history. I haven't got the slightest idea what they're thinking. In the beginning, I thought there was no chance that these two Democrats could win. I still think that the chances are very remote. Nevertheless, there are all kinds of reasons for doing it now, especially with Trump's behavior.
And the fact that some of these whack jobs in Georgia think that the elections, no matter what, are going to be false. So they're not going to come out to vote. That's what I've been
which
reading.
Which is why you got Trump heading down there, because he has to put a stop to that.
Well, I don't know. He started so much of this, of going after the governor, going after the Board of Elections, all Republicans. You wonder, so how do you restore trust in a system that you are screaming from the mountaintops is a complete disaster.
Well, let's restore trust among whom? That's the question. In other words, is it among the people who are in Georgia or the United States? Forget the United States. Now we talk about Georgia, and then we talk about the Republicans in Georgia. I mean, that subset of people, some of whom, and the Democrats are only too happy to talk about this, and I think for good reason, which is they're saying, oh, we already lost this election, so why should we go out?
All right. Let's go to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We welcome you to join us, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. 9 minutes before 10 o'clock on this Monday morning, the 30th of November. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Rosemary Armeo, and Libby Post all making up the panel this morning. We have many, many letters to get to, so I'll try to shoehorn in as many as we possibly can before the top of the hour when we have to go back to a break. So this one from somebody. It says from, and then there's no name, but okay, we'll say anonymous. Appreciate the concern, but the Supreme Court won't take a case where there is no evidence. Lawyers had to admit in court there was no evidence of fraud because their license is at risk. Roberts is thrilled there is no case. One should read Mary Trump's book to understand his pathology, but not everyone is crazy, especially on the Supreme Court. We go to Melinda.
I don't know about crazy, but I do know about prostitution. Not from personal experience, you may understand.
I was waiting for you to put an asterisk to that. Melinda said, Alan, what exactly are you thinking Trump will have the Proud Boys do? They can't prove fraud any more than Rudy has. Well, violence.
Wait. Do you think they're lawyers? They're not lawyers. They're thugs.
Right.
They're
going to
go out and do thuggery. And it's not only going to be the Proud Boys. He's going to call. Look, I don't think this guy has a bottom. I don't think he has a bottom. I think we can all agree on that.
Yes.
And therefore, anything he can do, he's going to do.
All right. We go to Melinda. I just read Melinda's letter. We go to Greg, who says, panel, please remember that many of us didn't vote for Trump as much as against Biden, still looking to drain the swamp. All right.
Hillary? I don't get the letter.
Meaning they voted for Trump again because they wanted to drain the swamp. They were voting against Biden. Was that the take?
I think that they voted against Trump and held their nose to vote for Biden because the swamp didn't get drained, but they don't necessarily see Biden as the answer.
All right.
Now, these are people who are anti-Trump votes, and they don't really like Biden at all because he's the establishment. He is indeed bringing back many, many people from the Obama administration, the number twos in a lot of his agencies. The real irony here is that Obama had one of the most corruption-free administrations we have ever seen in U.S. history. There was a remarkable lack of graft and corruption of the sort that was common and every day in Trump's world. I mean, if you want to see cases, I want his cabinet members. The several of them left because of outrageous behavior. None of them have answered for that in court. And along with forgiving Trump, I think those are going to all go away, too. So I just have to laugh at any idea that Trump was effective in any way at clearing out the swamp. He made it deeper and boggier than ever.
So I just want to reread the letter. Panel, please remember that many of us didn't vote for Trump as much as we voted against Biden. Still looking to drain the swamp.
Yeah, that means they did vote for Trump.
Yes, yes.
That's what it means. And I hope that she didn't mean Hillary as opposed to, because I think that was true with Hillary also.
Let's see. We go to David. Trump's threat to hold a rally during the inauguration is a major problem. Since he's no longer president, he will no longer be able to flout local regulations. Bans on large gatherings will now apply to him.
Ooh. Interesting.
It is interesting.
Interesting. You know, he spent, I think I read in the paper, correct me if I'm wrong, I know you will, that he spent $23 million on the Wisconsin recount, where the Democrats actually got 100 and something more votes than they did going in.
3 million.
It was 3 million?
It cost him like 34,000 and change for each vote that Biden got.
There was something. I knew there was a three in there somewhere.
Yes, yeah. I did cancel,
regardless, cancel, it's a lot of money.
Cancel the 20.
Well, regardless, it's a lot of money for nothing, right? I mean, it's not. Okay. Let's see. We go to Jason. I find it very compelling to hear about the actual number of court cases brought and dismissed instead of simply stating that they lost their most recent case. Last week, it was well over 30 different cases thrown out by judges from all over the country. I believe 31 was the number I last heard, Judy. It was something like that, right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, 31 was the one I heard, and they had racked up one win, but that was the one where the election inspectors could stand 6 feet close,
right.
Close instead of 10 feet. Eventually was overturned.
Yeah, they didn't have to be at the vending machines; they could go over to the white line. It was a major court win.
But, you know, the average person tends to look at the sheer number of lawsuits and be staggered by it. But for Trump, this is just the way he does business. It's the way he's always done business. It's just flood, like he floods the court of public opinion, he floods the legal system with lawsuits. And I guess our legal system allows him to do it, and that's one of the things you're hearing from the Republicans all the time. You've got to let him have his day in court, let him make the legal challenges he's entitled to. And all the while, people who believe in democracy are hearing things from him like this is a fraudulent election. It really does hurt things. But, again, he's entitled to challenge these things in court like he's done with every bankruptcy he ever had.
Eric writes, how does freedom of the press get differentiated from propaganda and misinformation? The two are not one and the same. Fox News and Newsmax are yelling fire in a crowded theater. You want that one,
well,
Rosemary?
Go ahead, Rosemary.
Well, the reality is you don't distinguish between it because there's enough of news value in what Fox is doing that they get away with it. It's the same way that lots of pornography goes out because it's not completely all purient interest. And so that's one of the costs of a truly free press is that you have to accept some propaganda and other bad things get into the mix, and we have to allow it and smut. And what we rely on, what we have relied on up to now, has been the good taste and discrimination and judgment of our citizens, in which I have very little faith after 2016.
Alan?
Yeah, you know, I just think that we all have to remember that the press is not the New York Times. The press is an amalgam of different, and I think Rosemary makes a very good point here. The press has Fox, they have the New York Times, they have the New York Post, they have the Washington Examiner, they have the Washington Post, and these are often, some of them are really quite despicable, you know, the ones I believe in. But the fact is that we really can't make the mistake of thinking that anything that the press does is okay, because it's not.
We're going to stop there for a moment and take a break. When we come back, we'll continue with our second hour. We should note that we'll be taking Governor Andrew Cuomo. He'll be speaking from New York City, I believe, at 11:30 this morning. So we'll be taking that live as soon as it becomes available. In the meantime, we're going to take a break. We'll breathe and, you know, work out some of the anxiety. And we'll do all of that by Mr. Anti-Anxiety Ray Graff. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Rosemary Armeo, and Libby Post. We'll move on to some other topics in just a moment. I just want to finish up with a few letters here. We got this one. It says, as I listen to your conversation, I'm troubled by your willingness to accrue much power and Teflonicity to an individual human being. Trump is as vulnerable and limited as all. Caesar was no different. Neither could do anything unless there was a cook who did the cooking. So let's not use that dangerously reductionist abbreviation, Trump, but focus on the need for political analysis of those groups and institutions that are interested in having a feeble, mere human in power and talked about us as if an individual who, like all, one die, will die, gets endowed with divine power.
Who's that from?
Rail.
Uh-huh. Well, I think it's not, the letter is not a good one. We can see how much and that's funny, right? We can see how much damage one person can do, one individual with the kind of power that Trump has. We can see that. Let's see. Here's a mixed metaphor: that the skunk stinks from the rear up, and this guy, I just made that up, and that this guy has had tremendous impact as an individual because of the power that accrues to him on the system. There's no other way to look at it. I'm so sorry.
Well, and the other point, though, and I think Rosemary touched on this earlier, and this is, I don't know that this is where the letter writer was going with this, but it is a point that Rosemary made of, okay, yes, we hold Trump responsible, but we also there are many other enablers, the cook, I believe, if I'm reading the letter correctly, that would also face whatever for doing his bidding, for breaking whatever laws were broken, if they were broken.
And in fact will be held a lot earlier than Trump is. Trump has a lot of power, but the people, the enablers, particularly those in the Senate in the United States Senate of the Republican Party, really do have to answer for having made this guy potentially the worst threat that American democracy has ever had. But in the end, it was Trump supported by them, not the other way around.
And the people in the administration, too, right, Rosemary?
I think it's more than people. I think it's the system. Trump, as I said earlier, has had a kind of genius in exposing every weakness and loophole in our system. And it's now time to start closing those up, if that's going to be possible with Mitch McConnell standing in leadership in the Senate. So I think there's plenty of blame here. Trump is a demagogue. And that demagogues are absolutely open to criticism. And he is Teflon. And he has reached our people, our fellow citizens, in a way we've not seen in a tremendously long time. It's incredibly dangerous. There's nothing in the Constitution that stops him, we found out. There's nothing in our Constitution right now to deal with a person who refuses to leave office. So that's the fault of the person. It's also the fault of that Constitution. And that's what our reader, I think, is getting at. We have lots of problems in this system that allows a demagogue to come to power, as has happened over the past 4 years.
Tom says, I agree with Alan. Trump cannot relinquish power now that he's tasted so much of it. I predict that he will establish a media platform to continue sowing divisiveness and hatred. We need to dig deep to supplant Trumpism with loftier values that need to be learned at the family dinner table and at school.
And that, by the way, is why we should not let him go scot-free at the end. We know that the president has said, I'm not interested in taking revenge. I don't think our Justice Department should do that. That's what Biden is saying.
Yep.
Nevertheless, when he gets down to New York City, I think if you let a miscreant like this get away with it, what kind of signal are you sending to everybody else, particularly to all those people who did far less harm than he's done, all these deaths and everything else? It's just beyond me. It's beyond me that we could allow that to happen.
Ruth says Trump is a showman and entertainer. Added to his narcissism, he's not going to end his presidency without a monumental production. So don't you think he's calmly golfing and smirking because he knows something is coming? I'm waiting for that shoe to drop, hoping it will not be a war of any size.
Agreed.
Anybody else want to know that? Judy?
Maggie Haberman from the New York Times, who's dealt with him in his pre-presidential days, she describes him as going minute to minute or news cycle to news cycle, that there is no long-term strategy. There is no grand plan. When I look at him golfing, it seems like he's just golfing with the pro there. He doesn't even have any friends to golf with. I imagine him on Thanksgiving Day sitting with a Swanson turkey dinner all by himself. I think there is no grand plan. I'm sorry.
No, you painted a picture.
Than they used to be.
Well, and the other thing too is that one thing that we've seen with Trump is that he doesn't even if he has a grand plan, he tends to tip his hand at some point and says something big is coming, or I have a big announcement, or something like that.
Well, his grand plan is psychological, isn't it? I mean, his grand plan is to be as disruptive and as, for want of a better word, malignant than they can be. His grand plan may not be although there are plenty of things that he's instilled here that really give one the shudders. But his grand plan is to really blow up everything.
Well, we're seeing it being rolled out. They're reclassifying a whole bunch of people in one of the departments. It's either the IRS or the economics, something to do with the economy. They're reclassifying all these people so that they could be fired if they didn't do what he wanted them to do. Mnuchin's making it difficult through some maneuvers for Biden to be able to use some of the stimulus money and the bailout money from COVID. I mean, they are trying to do stuff. And I wouldn't put it past Trump now with the assassination of the nuclear scientist in Iran to do something there, because Iran is blaming Israel.
Mm.
That still remains to be seen if that's true.
And we know that. And Libby, we know that. We know it.
We know
because,
what?
We know that he's trying to make trouble with Iran because his generals and other people called him off.
That's right. Right. So, here we go. I mean, I think he can wreak havoc and will make it more difficult for Biden. But I do think that when Biden gets in and things, after the inauguration, things calm down a little bit, there will be a reckoning of Trump, but also there will be some detente with the Republicans, because they are getting hurt by this as much as anyone else.
You have to realize that all the havoc that Trump is wreaking, he's doing it from the executive branch only. There's no involvement of Congress, which means that the next executive in can undo everything.
I hope you're right, because the story about what Mnuchin was doing made it seem like they couldn't. So I hope you're right. I mean, that's what I've been, wavering under, is that, well, this is all executive orders, all executive branch stuff, and they'll be able to undo it. And I just hope that.
Okay, Mnuchin's interesting because he moved money out of funds that he had that were already authorized by Congress back into the general fund. So if those were going to be used for COVID relief, they have to be reauthorized by Congress, which, again, that there you go. You're involving Congress, mm-hmm. and that makes it immensely more complicated. However, we're talking about COVID relief. Whoever is in office, and that's at every level from local to federal, is going to have to deal with COVID relief after December, after the end of December, when all the unemployment begins running out, because there's going to be massive hurt. There's no way that
Joe Biden cannot get some cooperation from Congress on that, I think. That's the worst he's done. Now, if he goes into war, if he tries a war situation, you have to look at even Iran right now, which has no love for the United States, and what happened under Trump has made them immensely more suspicious of motives and intent and long-term reliability. They have not reacted yet. They know this was an Israeli plot, that the Americans must be in on it. They've not done anything, and there are big wars being waged there. What do you go with? The hardliners who want to continue on the road to nuclear enrichment and the end of sanctions, or the middle of the line people who are saying, let's give Biden a chance, he can come in and normalize things again. It's very interesting.
I want to go to other stuff. Quick question from Adele, who says, why would we want Trump to attend the inauguration? I think Adele may have been in our kitchen yesterday as Kelly and I were discussing this. He would probably not wear a mask or social distance anyway. Yeah, I know this. Would that be such a bad thing? I mean, I understand.
I wanted to come because I want to see what Melania would wear.
Okay. All right, that's fair.
No, it would be a bad thing. I'll tell you why it would be a bad thing. I mean, he's despicable, all right. And you're all right. He probably wouldn't wear a mask just to bring attention on himself. Nevertheless, what we are talking about here is the peaceful transference of power, which is what makes this country so unique and important in world politics. And if one president is there to hand off and says, this is all a hoax, this is all a ruse, American democracy is no more, I say so, 70 million people voted for me, 72 million people voted for me, and I say that. And that's why he should be there.
Okay, I said that was the last letter, but then we get this one, and I get the point of it, but okay. Rebecca says, my harumphness will become apparent in a moment. The media, including WAMC, have been shockingly blind in providing and now continuing to provide the laser focus on Trump, the individual, that has allowed the agenda of his backers to be so successfully implemented. Get your eyes off the prize of this blazing black hole of attention and do your real job. Well, what is the real job?
Who wants to go?
I'll go a little bit. I'm all for not giving Trump a ton of oxygen, especially when he's saying lies, when he's lying. I all along I thought that, even before he was elected, I thought the media gave him way too much attention. It's great for your ratings. It's great for your page views because he does attract a lot of attention because he's so outrageous. But I think, especially in this critical time, you have a incumbent president of the United States saying the election was rigged, the election results should not be viewed as certain. That is definitely a story of our time that needs to be covered. There are tons of interesting stories to be covered with the Biden administration as he picks his cabinet secretaries, as he picks, you know, important key people in his administration. That is being covered as well. We can do both things, but but what's happening now with Trump is so outrageous. It needs to be called out, because if you just ignore it, there is that 1% chance that he might get away with it.
Libby?
I don't have anything else to add.
Rosemary?
Well, I think that anybody who says the media should do this is calling for the kind of media that then gets the most criticism. It's on us. It's on me and you guys on the panel to say, no, we're not going to cover Trump anymore. That is just absurd. Of course we're going to cover the president of the United States. And then the other thing is to say that we're not covering his enablers. We are covering both the PACs that have funded him, the sources of his support and why people in America have supported him, the Mercers and Sherrod Anderson. So we've covered all of this. I don't know what it is you think that we should be doing that we're not. You don't like the news. I get that. Nobody does. But I'm not sure what it is we're missing.
Alan?
Well, I get the point of the letter, though. The letter is saying, you know, Trump is a miscreant as an individual, attracts a lot of attention. In my opinion, that's where she's wrong, where he's wrong. It should we should be covering him because he is so powerful and because he does call the tune for everybody in his administration. On the other hand, I think the letter writer has something. But I also think he or she may be wrong in that. When people come up to me and say, why don't you people cover the fact that he's turning people from political appointees into civil servants? And I always turn around to them and I say, how'd you know that? Yeah, I knew. No, you knew it because you read it, because you heard us, because we said it. And we've done that, and we will continue to do that. But that's her point, I think.
All right. Let's go to, Judy may mention this. Let's talk about some of the people that Joe Biden is picking. We found out over the weekend that he's expected to name his top economic officials this week, which will be more big announcements. And as far as the communications team, he has hired an all-female senior communications team. And this is significant, filling out his economics and communications teams, enlisting mostly women, including several of color, in a move that reflected his campaign pledge to create an administration that presents a diverse face to America as it tackles twin pandemic and economic crises. Biden is expected to nominate Neera Tanden, the chief executive of the left-leaning Center for American Progress, as director of the influential Office of Management and Budget, according to people familiar with the matter who spoke on the condition of anonymity. Tanden, whose parents immigrated from India, would be the first woman of color to oversee the agency. The president-elect will also appoint Princeton University labor economist Cecilia Rouse as chair of the three-member Council of Economic Advisors, with economists Jared Bernstein and Heather Boucher serving as the other members. Rouse, who is African-American, would be the first woman of color to chair the council, which will play a key role in advising the president on the economy, which has been ailing since the pandemic struck. Jennifer, is it Psaki, I believe, Psaki? A veteran Democratic spokeswoman will be Biden's White House press secretary, one of seven women who will fill the upper ranks of his administration's communications staff. It is the first time all of the top aides tasked with speaking on behalf of an administration and shaping its message will be female. Judy, let me go to you first. How significant do you think this is?
As a 64-year-old woman, it's hard for me to see I'm sad that there's a hullabaloo about the idea that there's all females in the press office. I'm glad, that there are women in this administration. I wish that would be less of a story and the story would focus more on, what they're going to do for transparency. In fact, I'm hearing the story quote an unnamed source. Here we go again. This administration, nobody's going to come out and say, attach their name to innocuous things like who's going to be the new Treasury Secretary. I'm sad that we need to still focus on the fact that females are in positions of power. I will note that Kayleigh McEnany, Trump's press secretary, she has focused on the fact that she's in an all-female press office as well, despite the fact that she is not. She has two of her key spokespeople are men, so she even got that wrong or even lied about that, which she is wont to do and she has done for the year or so she's been in office.
Here, here. Good. Well said, Judy. That's true. Why are we still doing these stories? I feel like I'm back in the 70s where, the first woman coal miner in West Virginia, big story. And, dominating the journalism schools for 10 years now. So there is nothing there. And instead, we should be focusing on how does a press office really work? Could we please get back to regular press briefings and the end of lying?
Yeah, but the thing is that having these stories and putting a focus on the fact that all these women are going to be in these positions of power, along with Kamala Harris, is a great visual for young girls and younger women who still think that doors are closed to them, Well, I think it is important to do these stories and to highlight the fact that women really are now in higher positions of power. I mean, to have the entire communications team be women is going to change the way the administration communicates with the public. And it's going to be an interesting way. It's just going to be a really great role model for young girls to see. And I think the more we put a focus on that, the better off we are. And yes, I get it. Journalism schools were overrun by women, and then the salaries went down. So it'll be interesting to see how the parity of salaries in all of this. But nonetheless, I think it's important for us to say, yes, there are women here now. And yes, this entire department is being run by women. And a woman is going to be the Treasury Secretary. And a woman is going to be this, that, and the other thing. And a woman of color. And a woman of Asian Pacific descent. I mean, I think it's really important to keep saying this, because what Biden said was he wanted an administration that reflected the country, and that's what he's doing.
Well, I do find it a wonderfully refreshing change from Trump, where it was a white male was doing this, a white male is doing that. It definitely is an improvement.
Right, right.
All right. We have just about 2 minutes before we go over to a break. Kevin writes, Trump's grand plan is as grand as his health care plan. Judy is right. I live out in Trump territory, too. And the signs are coming down and the focus is going elsewhere and back to staying afloat during another possible shutdown. Even the racist at the end of my street took down 2 of the 3 Trump flags and his Confederate flag. Progress? Maybe. You know, we look for any glimmer of hope we can find. Good morning, says Harold. Let's not forget 2 big issues. Trump's actions have damaged the democratic process, no small issue. We are a seriously divided nation, illustrated by the over 70 million people voted for Trump, and we make a mistake by broad-brushing them as a monolith of sycophants. Example, Trump received 32% of the Latino vote this year. Anyone want that one?
Well, he got 32%,
which means he did not get 68%. I was on a call with folks recently, and they said, 17% of African American men voted for Trump. Well, that means 83% didn't. You know, there are going to be people who vote against their own interests, who vote for their pocketbook only, who vote on issues around choice and gay rights, and, you know, the social issues that have become wedge issues since, you know, before God was here. People are going to vote that way, but the overwhelming majority of those communities did not.
All right. We are just about ready to go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll talk more. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Rosemary Armeo, and Libby Post, all with us this Monday morning, the 30th of November. We will continue our conversation after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. I'm Joe Donahue. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Rosemary Armeo, and Libby Post make up the panel. We welcome your letters, panel@WAMC.org. Quick programming reminder that Governor Andrew Cuomo will be speaking at 11:30 this morning to give an update on the pandemic response in New York State. We'll be going to that live in New York City as soon as he begins, shortly after 11:30. Let us go to a couple of letters before we round out. We've got about 10 minutes together. Greg says, why have I not heard anybody state the now obvious explanation that Trump spent the summer trying to homogenize the virus throughout the American populace because he was aware that stage 3 vaccine trials would be speeded if there was more virus in this country?
What?
Yeah, Okay, let me read the second part of it, and maybe you'll like that question better. Here we go. Greg says, question number 2, from Michael Flynn's first Russian phone call through this very moment, the only thing that explains all of Trump's American democracy-destroying actions, including refuting the election results, would be that Vladimir Putin has an iron lock on him in some way and is directing his actions. If there is contrary evidence, please present it for consideration. I know of none. Well, Alan, this is a point you've been making for a long time.
Yes, I pass. Back to Rosemary.
No, I agree to Nancy Pelosi said, with you, everything leads back to Russia. If he isn't in his iron grip, then he's just a supremely stupid man, which is also an idea that I can embrace. And he has fostered the interests of Russia repeatedly in this country and in the wider Western alliance.
Phil, go ahead. I
think there's something more insidious than what's being suggested here. I think they've got something on him. And I think from the very beginning when he said, I love the Russians, he wasn't kidding. And then when he said to the ambassadors, you'll remember that, I fixed this thing by firing Comey, the Russian thing by firing Comey, I think the die was cast. There's something that is here that is terribly insidious. And I don't agree with those of you who have suggested on the panel this morning. I hate to be reactionary about this, meaning not to the right, but reacting to it. I don't agree that this is never going to be found out. I think it is. I think we have the ability to do that, and our intelligence people can do it. I think it's probably the worst thing about Trump. And by the way, the thing that has been least covered that should be covered.
Has Putin even called Biden yet?
Hold on. I'm sorry.
Has Putin?
Judy, go ahead.
No.
Putin hasn't even called Biden. Who else hasn't called Biden yet to congratulate him? I think Putin, if only for diplomacy's sake, you would think he would pick up the phone. Because it's looking really, really bad. I do worry, however, about what is being shredded at the White House right now, or what is being evaporated somehow, because they are trying. If there is such a conspiracy out there, you can bet Trump is trying to cover up his tracks, and he's in a pretty powerful position to do so.
We have been, the president said in that interview on Fox Business with Maria Bartiromo that he has been told that world leaders have called him up and said that this is a messed up election and it's the weirdest thing. And meanwhile, everybody else has, to our knowledge, as they have reported, that they have called up and wished the president-elect congratulations. And meanwhile, there's no call records within the White House that would have taken place, unless, of course, it was the only world leader he has spoken to is Vladimir Putin.
Well, I do think that Russia has something on him. I mean, I think Eric, I think, said it, that they get all their money from Russian oligarchs. So I think that's part of it, that he's mortgaged to the hilt to these people. And then I think that there's other salacious stuff that they may very well have on him from his escapades with women. And so, you know, that's part of all of this. I think that's why he's been kowtowing to Putin, but he also likes strongmen. I mean, we've seen that over and over and over again. He likes, you know, the guy in North Korea. He likes Turkey, Erdogan. He likes all these strongmen and thinks anybody who's not wielding power is a weakling and doesn't know what they're doing.
So to me, and I know this really has nothing to do with anything except that it's the little stories that just make your day. And there's so much that we take in as news consumers, whether it be about the virus or whether it be about the democracy and what's going on in our world. But the fact that on Thanksgiving, as we were going to very, very small gatherings and trying to the best of our ability to do what we can to flatten the curve, that the president sat behind a tiny desk,
mm-hmm,
and got into a fight with Jeff Mason from Reuters, and the fact that started Diaper Don to go viral on Twitter, and that the president got so upset that he declared Twitter a national security threat after it went viral, saying that it was an injustice and that it was totally false and that trends have absolutely nothing to do with what is really trending in the world.
And this speaks to Alan's perspective that the man is mentally ill.
Yeah, I just think that's the greatest story in the world. And because it is, it's humorous. The memes and the pictures that have gone up of him behind that little desk is just hilarious. People saying that he was put at the kids' table on Thanksgiving, that's hilarious. And of course, all of the size issue jokes that have been going on for the past 4 years, that's hilarious. So... These are the little gifts, and that, quite frankly, is what I was thankful for this holiday season. Yes?
I have to tell you, my friend Tom Nardacci and I have been going back and forth on Facebook. First, it was the press conference at the porn shop. Right?
Yes. Yeah, the Four Seasons. Or right, Four Seasons next to the adult toy store.
And then there was this. If we had done this to any of our clients, we would have been fired on the spot. I mean, this is just public relations, public affairs malfeasance, and yet his people keep getting away with it. It's amazing. Giuliani's still on the payroll. Callie McEnany's still on the payroll.
Your point is so well taken. Let Biden stumble, stutter. He will get it beyond belief. And yet this guy, with his penchant for doing the outrageous, is given a free pass and always has been.
There was an article I'm pretty sure it was the Times this weekend, talking about how Biden's picks have ethics issues.
Yes.
And I'm like, are you kidding?
Yeah. Top.
Give me a break.
Yeah.
Give me a break.
There was a pair of stories in the New York Times above the fold yesterday. One was on that, the ethics questions that he faces, and then the economic landmine that he's walking into that he may not be ready for. I question both of those stories.
Yeah. I mean, it's really... They're already trying to set him up. I mean, the Democratic Party, especially right now, is the biggest circle of firing squad we've got going. That's number one. And number two, now the media is going to sink the sub when it comes to Joe Biden. It's absurd. It's just absurd.
Now, Rosemary, did you read that story of the ethics story?
I did, and I laughed about all the people who said, oh, you protect Obama, and you're going to protect Obama and now Biden, and you just went after Trump. No, the media goes after anybody in power, and that was the proof of it to me.
But
ridiculous.
But didn't it seem also that from my reading of the story, it's what the people were doing when they were not in an administration, in the sense that they were worried about what their ethical quandary put them in during the 4 years that they were out of work because of Obama being out of office, that they went to work in the private sector. Well, what else are they going to do?
Right. That's what people do. You know, you have to support your family. You have to support your life. So people go to work in the private sector.
I don't think there's anything wrong at looking at it. Just like Hillary speaking to Goldman Sachs became such a big thing. Alan talked for years about how that was lack of judgment, knowing she wanted to be back in the administration. What you do in your whole life is relevant to what you do in the rest of your life. So there's nothing wrong with raising the questions. It's just such an irony to me that after the immoral Trump years, that any of the issues that were brought up in that article were somehow problematic.
Because they haven't done anything yet. It was just that it raises concerns that they may do something. Yeah.
Well, I know. They should do the same kind of stories on what has been done. Look at Elaine Chao. Look at these people who have made millions by being in this administration.
Yeah, that's why I say the comparison is just, you just can't support it. However, that is ethics. It's the appearance of impropriety. So there's nothing wrong with looking at it.
Well, I also think the Times, the Washington Post, and others are very aware that people have been calling them names and saying they're one side and the rest of it. So I hate to get into motivation, but it seems to me that there's a real possibility here that they do this above the fold in the Times to prove that their hands are clean.
Hmm. Anybody, Judy, you want in on that?
Well, one of the stories also mentioned the fact that they were trying to determine what clients these people actually served. So, and all that information wasn't forthcoming. So I think transparency up front is really important. And the Times the two reporters who wrote this for the Times, they weren't getting complete transparency from the law, from the firms. I can imagine the firms would be reluctant to release it, but you will hope the administration comes through. The idea is you want to make sure that people aren't getting preferential treatment because they have a special relationship with someone who is going to be in a position of power. It's as simple as that. And it's something the press has to get in front of and just watch. I agree with everybody that the swamp is boggier than ever with Trump. It's incredible. I think we've lost sight of what's right and what's wrong over the last 4 years. I think restoring it is going to be done bit by bit in the next, you know, it's going to take a while.
All right, stop there. We'll end there this morning. I want to thank everybody for being with us. Alan, thank you very much, as always. Appreciate
it. Thanks,
Jim. Judy, Rosemary, and Libby, thank you so much. Great to hear your voices.
Thank
be
you.
Well. We will return with the Congressional Corner right after this.